Nine-foot homemade oak bar. My name is Craig Todd, your host of Minor League News and Brews, talking about everything around the Pirates minor league system and giving you some beer reviews at the end of the show. There's something that I want, not really want to talk about today, but I feel like I have to talk about, just because it's the narrative that just won't die. There are certain writers, certain bloggers, certain people on Pittsburgh social media that just keep on bringing this guy's name back up. This is the last time, hopefully, that I will talk about it, but I definitely need to get some of this stuff off my chest just because I feel like that the narrative is very singular and it's focused on one particular player and it doesn't really encompass everything that went on during this coach's tenure and even before that when he was with a few different organizations. If you haven't figured out who I'm talking about just yet, I'm talking about Pirates former minor league hitting coach John Nunnally. John Nunnally, and I kind of entitle this the saga that is John Nunnally, the narrative that just won't go away, came up. I believe we all addressed what really needed to be addressed back in October, but then was brought back up in an Athletic article written by Stephen Nesbitt. Really kind of written, I guess, for the people who are angry about everything that's ever gone on with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Not a lot of new information in there, maybe new to some, but not new to all of us. And just brought up a lot of bad feelings again. So getting into, you know, the whole John Nunnally thing. Most of this stems from his time in the alternate site with Ke'Bryan Hayes. And then also this past season when he was working with Ke'Bryan Hayes during an entire month when he was injured and then going into the end of the season. And for people, I've brought this up a million times, is that part of this narrative that had already gotten lost was the 855 OPS that Ke'Bryan Hayes had in the month of June prior to his injury and prior to working with John Nunnally last season. Comes back out in August, does have the 956 OPS, but then in September and October, drops down to a very reasonable and still good 799 OPS. So even while he's working with Nunnally, some of those numbers back off into a little bit of not, you know, in the stratosphere of ranges, but a more normal and very acceptable range for Ke'Bryan Hayes. He worked with him at the 2020 alternate site in Altoona. Ke'Bryan Hayes had that Ted Williams month, 95 plate appearances / 376, 442, and 682, good for a 1.124 OPS, 5 home runs, hitting the ball all over the place, and just giving Pirates fans the hope of what he could be and would be in the future. We've seen, once again, months like that, but haven't seen that put together for large stretches. But I kind of want to go back to John Nunnally's entire tenure with the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then I'm going to take you back to a lot of people probably don't even really remember this. They were the Cleveland Indians at the time, now Guardians. He was a major league hitting coach at one point in time. But I'm just going to go back to 2019, his first year with the Pittsburgh Pirates, working with the Altoona Curve. For the season in the Eastern League, the Altoona Curve had the third worst OPS. And this is going to be the simplest and easiest way to go over this is, you know, a lot of people use average. WRC plus, different stuff like that. For me within the minors, I usually look at OPS. Are you getting on base? Are you hitting the ball hard? Are you slugging well? Well, the Altoona curve did not slug well. Like I said, third worst OPS in the Eastern League at 668. On the team, there were some, you know, pretty good players at that point in time. Jared Oliva, who is no longer with the team, didn't get much of a look here, hasn't got much of a look anywhere else. But he had that very good second half of the season. It was his, you know, turn the page moment. Ended up going to the Arizona Fall League that year. He had an OPS of 750. O'Neill Cruz, an OPS of 757. Hunter Owen, if anybody remembers Hunter Owen, he was the best hitter on that curve team with a 935 OPS. Following that 2020 alternate site season for the minor leagues, John Nunley got the promotion to the Indianapolis Indians. For the season in the International League, they had the fifth worst OPS, a 716, where the league average was 743. Some of the top performers on that team, Anthony Alford, we all remember Anthony. He had a 1.013 OPS. Will Craig, the 916 OPS, Bly Madris, a 786, and Christian Bethencourt, an 807. After that time, he went back down to Altoona. I believe that the way that it was kind of explained was to help players with that difficult jump. I've kind of talked about this, and this isn't just coming from my mouth. It's coming from experts and different stuff, that there are two places where the jump is the highest. The first one is from high A ball to double A, and then the other one is from triple A to the majors, helping, you know, bring some of those young players along to Indianapolis. And it was successful during that season. He had the fourth best OPS, the Altoona curve did, a 744 OPS, helped by Andy Rodriguez, 1,020, Jack Sawinski, 1,007, Blake Sable, 833, Aaron Shackelford, 813, Jared Triolo, the 795. But one of the players I think that he was kind of put down there to help, Leover Peguero, came up, and with that, he had a 692 OPS. And then, of course, 2023, the year where he helped Ke'Bryan Hayes, the Altoona curve had the second worst OPS in the Eastern League with a 689. We saw Matt Gorski regress from an 844 to a 733. We saw Matt Frazier take a tiny step forward from the previous season, but a regression from what he had done 2 years prior to that. He had an 848, then a 617, and then a 683. Sungshae Chang in 281 plate appearances, a 656 OPS. Henry Davis, the 981. Leover Peguero did do fairly well, but it was almost a tale of two seasons for him. One really good and then kind of falling off, and one being very bad, a 786 OPS. This is the reason, and I feel like the main reason why, you know, John Nunley was let go at the end of the season. A lot of people will say it was because of the Ke'Bryan Hayes stuff. If it was because of the Ke'Bryan Hayes stuff, it wasn't, in my eyes, as much of him helping Ke'Bryan Hayes as to what the narrative around the situation was. Some, you know, people on the outside talking to and saying that John Nunley should be the major league coach because of his help with Ke'Bryan Hayes. During that time, Chris and myself had even talked about, you know, John Nunley being brought on to the major league staff, because we basically equated it to a football team that you have the offensive coordinator, but then you have like the line coach, the wide receivers coach, the quarterback coach, the everything coach. I mean, there's like just so many different coaches. So and it wouldn't really cost that much, especially if it would be able to help one of your pieces who is, you know, a very significant part or should be a very significant part of what your future would be in Cabrian Hayes. So, I mean, that's kind of where I go, but I also want to take people back. Because I don't think a lot of people pretty much know John Nunnally as the Altoona Curve hitting coach who helped Cabrian Hayes, but they don't know the history of his coaching tenure, which he kind of, you know, came onto the scene in 2010 with the Indians, as I mentioned, now the Guardians. For the year, the team had a 96 OPS plus, which was a 700 OPS for that, 16th in baseball. So pretty much, you know, kind of right towards the middle. And what a lot of people don't know is that he was fired from his position in the middle of the season the next year with the Indians, now Guardians, on June 19th, 2021, because the team wasn't getting, or he wasn't getting as much out of the team as he possibly could. The team was performing well, but that was mostly because of the pitching, wasn't really because of the hitting. The team ended up being around 10th in OPS plus that year, but took a little bit of a jump up after John Nunnally was gone. After that, he goes to the Buffalo Bisons in 2013. They have the number one offense in their league that year, a 736 OPS with players like Jose Reyes, Kevin Pillar, and a 29-year-old Andy LaRoche. He goes to the New Hampshire Fisher Cats the next season after that, because they kind of like bump him back down to try to get him to help the younger players again. They have the worst OPS in the league that year at a 685 OPS. He is subsequently fired from the Toronto Blue Jays organization and then latches on with the Red Sox in 2015 with the Salem Red Sox. They have a 687 OPS, one of the worst in the league again that year. And then he goes to the Portland Sea Dogs, and they have the fifth highest OPS of a 718 with the likes of Andrew Benintendi, Yoan Moncada, Cody Decker, Mauricio Dubon. I mean, a lot of really good players, and they are, you know, fifth in the league in OPS. So this is where, like, to me, like, this isn't the first time that John Nunnally's been fired. I mean, and as we know right now, he has not attached anywhere as a coach, because it would have been shoved down our throats by certain media members and certain bloggers and certain people on the Pirates social media things. And this is something that just kind of fires me up, just because, number one, the whole narrative wasn't out there as to what his performance was like, what his performance has been like throughout his coaching career. And then just the other piece of it is that he's gone. It's not going to change. Like, you can continue to bring that back up. And yes, I know that the offense is absolutely struggling right now with Ben Cherington's plan. Everyone will say it's Andy Haynes' plan. It's Ben Cherington's plan. It should be clear as day with the analytics and everything that goes into it, and the lefty-righty matchups, and playing, you know, certain matchups a certain way, and the approach at the plate, which is a very similar approach that was used by Eckstein prior to Andy Haynes being hired. Hiring Andy Haynes because it's something that he was implementing in Milwaukee. And yes, that he was fired from that, but they didn't even really look at that that way. They looked at a guy who could bring and who could, you know, use that type of thing in conjunction, or, you know, to be able to put it to the players, maybe in a different way, a different light. But it's the same plan. So, I mean, I get bringing that name back up again because it gets you a couple more clicks And you could say that I'm doing the same thing here talking about it. But for me, I just want like the entire narrative to be out there and then to be done talking about it. Because like I said, he's gone. Likely probably not coming back. And wasn't the greatest hitting coach because everyone would say, oh, he's so great with working with younger players. I thought he should have been, you know, promoted and different stuff to the major league squad after helping Ke'Bryan Hayes. But to me, the narrative is so much bigger. And honestly, the narrative just needs to go away. Are you a fan of the Pittsburgh Pirates and supporting small businesses? If so, Bucks in the Basement has you covered. Introducing the Bucks in the Basement Vouch Store with products from places like Split Rock Coffee. Coffee with a purpose. Established, owned, and operated by disabled veterans sworn to protect America. Or Camp Craft Cocktails. More than cocktails. It's a mission to build longer tables where everyone is welcome. We try and vouch for these products. Bucks in the Basement, proudly brought to you by Vouch. Visit our Vouch store at bucksinthebasement.com or simply click on the link in the show notes. It's that time again. The top five Pirates prospect performers. In no particular order, number one, Braxton Ashcraft, the 2018 second round pick of the Pirates out of Robinson High School in Texas. And as everyone knows, he was added to the 40-man during this past offseason. But what you might not know, unless you read some stuff on him, I believe it was maybe Alex Stumpf who wrote the article during spring training. Might have been Andrew Destin. I'm not exactly sure. Jason Mackey, one of those. He was drafted. The next year, he dislocated his non-throwing shoulder in 2019. In 2020, he had knee surgery. In 2021, he had Tommy John. Came back in 2023, pitched 52 and two-thirds innings to the tune of a 2.39 ERA, a 1.082 whip, which actually got even better and down below one in his limited work in Altoona. Back in Altoona this year, I got to see him on the Altoona Curve home opener. Did not pitch that great during that game, but his stats, especially the ones I really look at, are looking good so far in 2024. Through 32 and a third innings, he has a 1.175 whip. The 4.18 ERA is kind of being affected by the first few starts where he was really struggling. Over his last two starts, 12 innings pitched, 15 Ks, 3 base on balls, 0 earned runs, good for a 0.75 whip, which includes his most recent start on May 14th, where he went 7 innings and struck out 10, looking very strong. But this is something that I talked about during the most recent episode of Bucks in the Basement, which came out on Wednesday. Go back and listen to that. I had Charlie Franson from the Bucko Fever Pod at Bucko Fever Pod on and discussed the innings limit or the innings crunch that would be on Braxton Ashcraft. Just because, I mean, you see the extensive injury history, and then you look at him pitching below 53 innings last year, you probably would be looking at somewhere around 100 innings this year. Could see him possibly moved to the developmental list at some point in time. Maybe there would be a little bit of an IL, quote-unquote, rest stint during that point in time to maybe get him to the end of the season. If he were to be called up by the Pittsburgh Pirates at any point during the season, I could really see that being in a spot start role, or maybe even more likely a long relief or a bullpen role. His stuff definitely would play with that. So, I mean, Braxton Ashcraft looking really good. Sticking in Altoona, number two is Sean Sullivan, double S. He has a 3.12 ERA, a 1.125 whip, 27 strikeouts, does have the 10 walks. Last year in Altoona, numbers looked pretty good there as well. 113 innings pitched, 97 strikeouts to 38 walks, a 3.88 ERA, a 1.267 whip. I do know that this is somebody that our good friend Anthony Murphy over at Bucks on Deck, the Substack. Follow him as well at @_Murphy88. That's the _Murphy and the double eights there. Somebody who he has been really high on, as well as his partner in crime, Jeff Reed at Nola Jeffy. Nola at Nola Jeffy. Sean Sullivan pitching really well. When I said another Altoona pitcher, I'm guessing that you were probably thinking of Solomito or Chandler. But right now in Altoona, it seems to be the Ashcraft and Sullivan show. Number three on this list before Charles McAdoo down in Greensboro. And the one thing that I will say about McAdoo is we think about all these second base prospects. He's a second baseman, left fielder. The size that we talk about with them, and we always assume that all of them are under 6 feet, some of them 5'10", some of them under 5'7", but McAdoo is 6'1", 210 pounds. Not extremely large guy, but not a small guy either. Continuing to hit well down in Greensboro, slashing 308, 381, 539, good for the 919 OPS, six home runs, does have a little bit strikeouts above 20% at 20.9, walks, which I usually like to see up above 10%, sitting at 9% right now, but the weighted on base percentage is 419, which would really, you know, kind of bring that up just a little bit. So you would be seeing, you know, that a little bit higher. And the 160 WRC plus staying in Greensboro. And I could have went easy here again. I could have went with Hunter Barco. Hunter Barco during his last start, five innings pitched, one hit, three Ks, zero walks on the season, a 1.65 ERA across 27 and a third innings, the 0.951 whip. But I'm going Derek Diamond. Derek Diamond, the sixth round draft pick out of Old Miss back in 2022. So far on the season, very limited work. 18 innings pitched, 17 Ks, the 1.111 whip. 250 ERA, 17 Ks, one walk, as I said, and then on 5-16, his most recent start, five innings pitched, three hits, zero earned runs, five Ks, zero walks. Last two starts, nine innings pitched, seven hits, zero earned run, nine Ks, and one walk. The man has one walk on the season so far in 18 innings. And then finally, number five, Eddie Rodriguez, not Andy. Eddie Rodriguez, this is a guy that in our Pirates prospect fantasy draft was on my team, went to the IL at the beginning of the season. I've brought him back And he's been giving me some pretty good results here. Eddie Rodriguez is a one of those guys who has the NA next to his bonus signing, the international signing, basically meaning he received $10,000 or less. In 67 plate appearances, slashing .286, .379, .357. Good for, it's not great right now, but it is a .736 OPS, 4 doubles, 16 Ks, 9 walks. I believe that the power will come around even more. Did have 4 home runs in 159 plate appearances in the FCL last year. Looking really good. The entire Bradenton Marauders hitters looking exceptional at this point in time after getting off to a rough start. But those are your Pirates' top 5 prospect performers. And I'm hoping that some of these other guys pick it up because I don't want to be doing a lot of repeats this season.
A pitcher of beer, a pitcher of beer, let's order another pitcher of beer. That pitcher of beer should come over here. I love that pitcher of beer.
I've got a couple more weeks of beers kind of on the shelf here this week and next week leading into the holiday weekend. From my brother-in-law's slash buddies baseball trip, came to Pittsburgh this year. We started off the weekend at Allegheny City Brewing. Allegheny City is one of my favorites, if not my favorite brewery in Pittsburgh. Was about a 5, maybe 6 minute walk from the Airbnb that we were staying at. The first beer I had on the weekend is the Ole One Flip Cup Cream Ale. I'm a sucker for a cream ale, coming in at 4.9%. Give that one a 4.75. Knock it down to 4.25. Next up was the Oceanic IPA, coming in at 6.6% ABV. That's a great hazy IPA. Give that one a 4.75, knock it down to 4.25. And the beer of the weekend, the Duck Derby Light Lager. Not only did we have the Duck Derby Light Lager, we signed up for the Duck Derby. We went to the Duck Derby. Our duck did not win in the Duck Derby, but we jokingly said that we should now not have a brother-in-law slash buddies baseball weekend. We should have a Duck Derby weekend. But the Allegheny City Duck Derby Light Lager, made for the Duck Derby. Give that one a 450, knock it down to 400. And then as we were kind of like getting ready for the Pirates game on Saturday, we stopped in at Late Edition Brewing Company, formerly 412 Brewing, and we drank Get in the Clown Car, a hazy IPA, coming in at 6.8%. Give that one a 4.25, knock it down to 3.75. Like I said, I've got 4 more on the shelf for next week. I'm either going to have to start drinking some beer here pretty soon, or maybe going over to my favorite beer distributor over at Creekside Beer. Maybe they can do some beer reviews for me here coming up. But until next time, let's go Indians. Let's go Curve. Let's go Hoppers. Let's go Bradenton Marauders. And let's go FCL Pirates.